How do you do?
Mr. Carl Emley feels it would be a little unkind to present this picture without just a word of friendly warning. It is one of the strangest tales ever told. It deals with the two great mysteries of creation, life and death. I think it will thrill you. It may shock you. It might even horrify you. So if any of you feel that you do not care to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to, we've warned you.
You did watch free television a fair amount when you were a kid, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there is a bit of a generation lap between you and me. Do you have a relationship at all with the Universal Monsters?
Whoa, that came out of...
I know, yeah, that was what you were expecting, right?
Yeah, but so look, I think I was kind of more, I was sort of an old soul when it came to my TV watching, which sounds really fucking bizarre, but I watched a lot of Nick at Night. So I watched fucking Green Acres, Mr. Ed and bullshit like that. And I loved like the Godzilla movies. I don't know anybody that watched fucking Mothra that was my age. Nobody watched fucking Mothra, but I watched the Godzilla movies, fucking Creature from the Black Lagoon, Frankenstein. I love Frankenstein.
For me, that stuff was running on UHF television as a kid. I watched on in black and white, often on a black and white TV.
Same.
So I have a lot of vague memories because I tended to watch that shit when I was younger. And then as I got older, I guess I got more into more contemporaneous stuff where when I was a kid, anything that was fantastical and there was a real dearth of fantastical stuff on television in those days, you latched onto because the landscape just wasn't as geek-centric as it would become, most assuredly. And so you didn't necessarily have to be a horror geek or a comic geek or a sci-fi geek. It was anything that wasn't fucking mainstream soap opera sitcom bullshit you'd cling to because it was something different. It was something off the beaten trail. So I used to watch the Universal Monsters on UHF, but it's really something from early in my childhood. When as a kid, they would have those Remco action figures. They tried to sell the Universal Monsters in the Star Wars format. The reason why I picked them up was because they were fucking cheap because they didn't go over very well at all. But I was never invested in it the way I am so many other things from that time period. Since for me, I felt like the Universal Monsters belonged to a generation or so beyond me. It felt like that was something that was handed down from the Greatest Generation or from the Baby Boomers, that it was very much felt like what appreciation I had for it felt secondhand. I was curious if you even had an association with any of those properties.
Frankenstein mostly. And anything I remember from, say, Wolfman or Dracula or Creature in the Black Lagoon, it's just like some scenes that I remember as a kid that were impressionable on me, like the Creature of the Black Lagoon. I think there were like some dudes on a boat or a dock. I remember the creature coming out of the lagoon for them and then the werewolf running through the forest or whatever shit, you know, and shit like that. Like I have flashes of memories of that. Mm-hmm. I have seen that, but I definitely have more memories of Frankenstein. And I think it was like, I probably had a streak going as a kid where I was the shitty Frankenstein Halloween costume with the plastic mask and the,
oh shit, yeah,
the thin rubber band that would go around the back of your head.
Mm-hmm. Did it come with like a plastic poncho?
Oh yeah. And it compares in comparison to these insane costumes you can get for like $5 now. It blows the shit we used to wear away. Like, it's insane.
I don't think we appreciate just the shit like plastics. The shit you can do with plastics now that you couldn't do back in the day. It's just amazing.
Textiles that you figured had been around for a million fucking years. And now it's, oh, no, now we added muscles to them. It's like, what? Like, I can buy a $10 Captain America costume with muscles built in? And this is $10. $10.
That's $10 in today's money. $10 today is not a lot of fucking money.
No.
Even if you had $10 in 1980, you couldn't get anything remotely resembling that. And $10 was way more money in 1980 than it is today.
Thank you, China. Let's be real. Let's shout out who needs to be shouted out. Or Malaysia. I mean, that's sort of my fascination with Frankenstein. I guess it's sort of related to the Universal Monster version of Frankenstein. Because I don't know where else. What the fuck would I have seen Frankenstein?
When you picture Frankenstein, you still picture the Universal one. People, I don't know if they realize that the flathead, the green skin, the bolts in the neck, the basics of the costume, that is owned by Universal Studios. Whenever you see these off-kilter, off-brand Frankensteins with long hair and shit like that, you don't necessarily even realize that's Frankenstein when you look at them because you're so in your memory what Frankenstein looks like, and it's Universal's Frankenstein. And you saw that replicated in the Munsters, which was a Universal TV series. To a lesser degree, you saw it with the Monster Squad, which wasn't Universal, but the company was trying their very best to get as close to the lines they could get away with without getting sued by Universal. So,
dude, you're talking Munsters and Monster Squad, if you had a van with free candy written on the side and on the inside you had Monster Squad and the Munsters, you were definitely abducting me. Rushing, but you're like it's almost like you were planning to abduct me, and you're like, I'm gonna abduct Illegal Machine here. I'm gonna talk about Monster Squad and fucking the Munsters, because that is my fucking jam right there, dude.
How is it we've never done a Monster Squad podcast then?
Or fucking Munsters. I fucking love the Munsters as a kid. So now those are the two. If I hear Dracula and Frankenstein, I'm picturing Grandpa Munster and Herman Munster, and I'm picturing Bela Lugosi and fucking Boris Karloff, right? Those are the four faces that pop up for when I hear Dracula and Frankenstein. So that definitely dates the shit out of me.
It's funny too, because for some reason I always went with like the lesser kind of knockoff. And so, you know, I watched Webster instead of watching Different Strokes. And, you know, Munsters was sort of the poor man's Addams Family. And while I respect the Addams Family and I really like the movies they made in the 90s, but my heart is still with the Munsters.
Dude, for me, it's the total other way around. For me, the Addams Family was the broke-ass Munsters. And maybe that's just from what I was exposed to. Maybe the Munsters were just more popular and the Addams Family was older school, so I didn't see it as much.
It's the exact opposite. The Addams Family was very successful, ran for years and years. The Munsters only got like two seasons. It was one of those shows like Gilligan's Island that really wasn't that big when it was on, and it gained steam in syndication and on reruns.
Both shows were popular for 2 years, but could not compete once shows in color, particularly Batman, began to dominate the scene. The Addams Family and the Munsters, born on the same week in 1964, both met their demise in the spring of 1966. However, both families have had brilliant afterlives in syndication.
Dude, look, the fucking Munsters had everything, all right? It had a fucking hot rod. Yes, you're ticking my box there. It had a monster hiding under the stairs. Yes, check that box. It had the hot stepdaughter or whatever. Yes, you're checking that box. It had fucking Frankenstein. Okay, yes, I'm fully invested in this franchise.
Well, that, and because they were the Universal Monsters, and because they were very big, cartoonish, Addams Family did seem cheap by comparison because they're just gothy-looking people. They didn't have Lurch. They didn't have Thing. They didn't have all the cool shit that the Munsters had.
Did they have the continuity behind it?
Oh, no, wait. I just lied, because they did have both of those things. I just completely fucking crossed. That was like the two fantastic things that the Addams Family did have was Lurch and Thing. But the Munsters had everything else.
Yeah, but like Lurch and Thing were like knockoff Frankenstein and Wolfman in a way. You know what I mean? Like the Munsters had the continuity. It's like, oh.
Well, no, Thing was the hand, wasn't it? Because It was the furry one. Thing is the hand, right?
Thing the hand or it's the hand?
I think Thing is the hand and it is the cousin it, the fuzzy guy.
Cousin it, got it. Yeah. So to me, Addams Family always seemed like knockoff shit. Because none of those characters I had any sort of, like I said, continuity around them. Where I knew Herman Munster was Frankenstein. I knew Gramps was Dracula.
The sweet fucking car, yeah.
Hell yeah, dude. Mockingbird Lane, man. Rock 13, on.
13 Mockingbird Lane, yes, absolutely. Okay, cool.
Oh, it's alive. It's alive, it's alive. It's alive!
When this dead hand moves, the monster created by a man they called Mad is turned loose to strike terror into the hearts of men. To shock women into uncontrolled hysteria.
Elizabeth!
To prey upon the innocence of children. This is the story you've heard about, talked about. The spine-tingling, blood-chilling story that stuns your emotions. Frankenstein!
I agree with you. I do think that Frankenstein was definitely the king of that group. I definitely remember those movies the best, and I always enjoyed them the best. So in terms of story, I thought the Frankenstein was definitely the winner amongst those concepts. Like, his movies were the best. The acting was the best. The stories were the best.
See, my memory is not enough to be like, oh, yeah, the acting in fucking Frankenstein was spot on. Like, it's just not enough. I don't have that kind of memory. Obviously, you remember Igor, so that's one supporting character. I don't know any of the sub-fucking supporting supporting characters in Wolfman or Creature from the Black Lagoon or Dracula or any of that stuff. So,
well, that and just Carlos' performance as Frankenstein was so iconic, so endearing, and so oft mimicked.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, exactly, because you've got a million fucking Draculas, but everybody, for the most part, tries to do that Frankenstein. I mean, there's a reason for that.
If you go to Herman Munster, the amiable Fred Gwynne, you love him as well. And that part of it's because of Fred Gwynne, because he's awesome. You love Fred Gwynne, but also because it's Frankenstein. It's like it's a great combination of two things that you either already always loved or grew to love because of the association.
God, dude. And again, this is like, I was a fucking weird kid. So it always tripped me out because Gramps and fucking Herman Munster were in Car 54. This is total Nick at Night bullshit. Who the hell knows what Car 54 is?
Where are you?
I got no business talking about Car 54. I'm not about to fucking retire, okay? Or I'm not already about to die. It's so fucking weird, dude. Like I said, I was a bizarre child. I don't know what time.
Oh, okay, I thought that was going somewhere.
There was nothing more than I knew that they what existed. was Herman Munster, what was the actor's name again?
Fred Gwynne.
Right. So he was also in Car 54 and anyway, okay, sorry. The memories are flooding back from my Anyway,
I always recall him in Pet Sematary as well.
You know? Oh, right. Yeah. Well, Pet Sematary. That tripped me up.
One of my phrases, one of those mottos that comes to mind for me often is sometimes dead's better. I think there's reason that.
How has that not been remade?
I'm sure it's coming.
Yeah. Of all these weird fucking movies, they get rebooted. That's a movie that's long overdue.
Well, the simple fact that it made so much fucking money, you know somebody's already got some version of Pet Sematary in pre-production right now, or at least they're pitching the shit out of it, guaranteed.
Oh, man, dude. They could do some really weird shit with all the modern-day CGI, too. I would not see that film.
I really enjoy Pet Sematary. I do think that it was one of the best of the Stephen King adaptations. I saw that in the theater, and it did fuck me up. But I could definitely see the potential for improvement, especially because the parents in the movie were shit. Tasha Yar was okay, but the dad just really felt like some soap opera dude.
You give Lionsgate Pet Sematary? I'm not seeing that movie. I'm not seeing that movie.
Yeah, especially as a dad. I think that would fuck you up, right?
Oh, and of I have pets and kids. I don't want any of this shit. Yeah. And I don't like scary movies to fucking begin with. You got fucking Insidious with key hands? No thanks, checking out.
Okay.
Did you ever talk about Frankenstein, though, Vixen?
So I didn't see Frankenstein until I was in high school. This is the original Karloff one. Yeah, the original. Some friends of mine, I went to a different high school up north. There was a theater that would do midnight showings. So that's like Rocky Horror and all that stuff. And they would do midnight double features. It would start at midnight. It'd be over by like 2, 2:30. They did Frankenstein and Nosferatu. That's the first time I ever saw that movie. That was a true silent film. But they would do the shit where the theater would actually have a keyboardist and he would do, he would play the music. Because I remember thinking, what the fuck is this? Because they were trying to do like the whole interactive kind of experience. But it was fucking dirt cheap. It was like $3. Everybody would be there in their heavy metal t-shirts. I remember that's the first time I went somewhere and like all the dudes were in like black shirts and blue jeans. And I remember thinking like, this is like a fucking uniform thing. Like it was just really weird. Iron Maiden t-shirts. That's where I saw like the animated heavy metal cartoon. They did a couple other ones, but it was just this little old theater that had, I believe, two screens. Some friends of mine were like, hey, let's go check out the double feature. I'm like, all right. So we went. I enjoyed Frankenstein a lot. I remember enjoying it a lot. I had never really watched that one. And then they did the other one, and that was my exposure to it. And I was like, wow, that was really cool. Every time I'm exposed to these movies, I think you have to see them in stages. As a child, their wonderment. As you're a teen, you can kind of relate to them. Like, I always related to the Wolfman, especially when I was in my teens. Now that I'm an older man, I want to revisit them and see what new point of view or experience I'll come out of watching them.
The scientist that made Frankenstein.
Scientist was Frankenstein.
Well, that was his name, though. That was his last name. His first name, I forget.
Yeah, because the monster was just the monster. He didn't really have a name.
Yeah, but it didn't have a name.
Everybody, including me,
I know that.
Growing up, would always refer to him as Frankenstein.
But I understand. The scientist was Frankenstein. I'd have to double-check his first name. When he built Frankenstein, of course he was a grave robber. He was going and getting all the parts to build Frankenstein. He was finding all the good parts that he wanted to put together, the arms, the legs, the hands, and the head and all that.
Frankenstein was cool. My favorite one was Bride of Frankenstein. I really liked Boris Karloff. I really thought Boris Karloff was cool. He did Frankenstein. He did the mummies. Later years, he did a lot of comedies, too. It hasn't been all that many years ago when they come out with the movie Shelley's Frankenstein. I hated that movie. I mean, and I think I've got it. But I hated the movie. And I didn't like the book when I was young and I read it. The Frankenstein movies were all right. But let's face it, the story they were taken from is pretty dreary.
I mean, you know, I was reading stuff because that's kind of one of my favorites too, in a way, because I looked up the Frankenstein when I got to see the original black and white Frankenstein, and of course the famous saying
he's alive,
all that. Today, now, how you can research stuff so easy, if you actually look stuff up as far as the books and who wrote Frankenstein, it was a woman. So I just thought that was a little bizarre, but I thought it was pretty cool that a woman wrote
one of the seminal works of horror.
Yeah, because I never knew that. You know, I just thought it was somebody come up with that idea when they started doing all these monster movies.
Bride of Frankenstein was always my favorite of the Frankenstein movies. Until Gene Wilder got a hold of it, that became my favorite.
Well, and that, and
we
Brian
saw that first run. That was one of the ones we saw too.
I don't know which one is the actual Universal Frankenstein. The ones in black and white counts like green face and flathead. So I think I've seen those. I've seen it in pretty much all the cartoons, different media. I read the book a long time ago. I do believe from all the Universal monsters, I think Frankenstein might be one of my favorites. A very misunderstood monster. Oh yeah, he looks pretty bad, evil, ugly, but he's sweet on the inside. He doesn't know what is going on in this world because he was brought in, so he doesn't know if it's evil, if it's not evil, what is he, and he only reacts to the violence that they give him because he's a monster. A good person, but because of the circumstances of people treating him bad and doing bad things to him, that makes him scared and anger, and that's why he does the things that he does. It's just like the concept of Frankenstein, I think, is a very touching compared to the other ones, to the other monsters. I think him is more compassion, I don't know, more deep meaning, especially with people that they get bullied all the time, and but they don't even care to know the real people, you know, the real person, just how they look, or, and that's why I like him the most.
I wanted to talk to a guy that I know is a real Universal Monsters fan, or monsters in general. Where do you come at these characters from? Where were you exposed to them?
When I was little, I saw all the original Universal Monster movie on usually Saturday mornings. After cartoons, they play a horror movie, or they would have like Kung Fu Theater and then a horror movie.
Did you grow up here? You grew up out of state, right?
Wisconsin. Yeah.
Okay, see, because you're still describing the same shit that me and Fix It over here were watching too. You had the Kung Fu Saturdays. You had the black and white horror movies would usually show like earlier in the mornings after the cartoons. So they had the whole same setup.
Three channels.
Yeah.
The Universal stuff, the black and white monster stuff was usually on 20 or 39. So that's what got you hooked?
Yeah. Watching the Wolfman and
Well, actually, I mean, I got the list right here. Like, I want to see how you feel about these characters. Okay. And I'm going to start with a random one, too, because this is just how the wiki page works.
Here is all you've ever wanted in entertainment in one superb show. Here is matchless story, suspenseful, terrifying, never so thrillingly presented. Here in breathtaking technicolor is superb spectacle and splendor and romance. Here is a chorus of 100 voices, a ballet of 100 dancers, a cast of 1,000, starring Nelson Eddy in his most vigorous performance, lovely Susanna Foster, and Claude Rains in the most coveted role of the year as the Phantom of the Opera.
My music! You've stolen it! You've stolen my music!
The Phantom of the Opera.
Man, I saw the show at the Venetian in Vegas.
The actual the musical.
Yeah.
How was that? I've never seen it. It was any good?
Yeah, it was pretty good. We had really fucking good seats on accident. We went to so in Vegas, you know, the time's all weird because shit doesn't start happening until it's like really late at night. So we thought we were going to a late showing, but really it was fucking daylight outside. It was like a 7 o'clock showing. Nothing's going on in Vegas at 7 o'clock. So we got in there and there was nobody in the damn fucking place. And this guy walked over to us with a Secret Service headset. And he's like, yep, I'm right here. Yep, this is him right here. And then he goes, pardon me, you two, would you like to move up to the very front row? And we were like, fuck yes, we would. So he pulled us out because there was nobody in the whole fucking place. So they were trying to fill the seats up close. So they upgraded us to who knows how expensive those seats were. They're interactive, really, really cool. Where props and shit are like flying over your head and stuff. It was pretty rad.
Yeah, no, I've never seen the movie. I've never seen the play. I've heard good things, but really the only thing that I think of is I had a book as a kid of monster makeup, you know, which showed, you know, talked about how they did the makeup for mostly stuff from like the 50s backwards. And they had this whole section
devoted to Lon Chaney, the Man of a Thousand Faces, and how nobody ever figured out how he could do some of the makeup that he managed to do, especially with what he had to work with, and the iconic image of him as the Phantom with the big pig snout and shit. You know, and of course everybody knows the reveal because that's been seen a billion times. People who've never seen the movie at least have seen that shot of the reveal, but I've never actually even seen all the old, you know, of his version of the movie. I don't remember ever seeing maybe a version, like a Technicolor version of the 50s or 60s, I think I saw. I think that's the only time I've ever seen anything related to the Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah, I mean, it's been parodied to death, so I feel like I've seen it, but I've probably never seen it. You know what I mean? One of those deals.
Phantom of the Opera, I thought it was good.
Now, that was a color one, right? No, or are you talking about the original, Lon Chaney? Okay, yeah. So you have seen that one.
I have seen that.
How long was that? Was it like a feature-length movie, or was it like more of a short?
Oh, man, I want to say it was a feature-length movie, but the feature-length movies aren't as long as they are now. God, I know Dracula ain't but an hour, I think.
Yeah, because I mean, with Phantom, they would show the black-white movies when I was growing up, but they didn't show silence. And I don't know if I'd have had the patience to read the cards and everything else. You actually sat there and were devout. You watched the whole movie. Yeah. And you dug Phantom of the Opera then.
I thought it was good. It was a creepy monster.
Great effect.
You know, I think that was a big part of it. My mom bought me a book when I first started liking monsters that told how they made special effects makeup.
And was it green? And did it have like Frankenstein and the Wolfman on the cover, like drawings of them? I had a similar book that I got at a flea market when I was a kid.
But I remember.
And they revered Chaney and what he was able to do.
It was so neat. I mean, they went into depth on how they did stuff. And I mean, it's so much more complicated now because they didn't run like polyfoam molds and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Or gelatin molds, anything. You know, but I suppose they probably did use gelatin back in the day. But like silicone, they didn't use.
Did they have silicone? They didn't have silicone.
No,
right?
Probably not. You know, those procedures they use today. But that book, I wish I still had that book because I still think of it. I just like that scary aspect, you know, a creature. I'm not big into like serial killer movies and stuff like that. I think the only stuff like that I like is if it's about like Jack the Ripper. I like that.
Because there's a romantic quality to that.
Well, if you read about the police and everything back then and how they did it, you know, it's kind of a fascinating era in general. But otherwise, yeah, I'm not into slasher films and stuff like that. I like creatures and always have.
So what do you think, though, it is about the creatures versus actual human monsters? For instance, Paquita, she's really into ghosts. She's into ghosts and she's into demons. Anything that involves possession, anything that gets into their Catholicism, that gets her. She believes in this stuff, for starters. So she thinks that it's a real thing. The fact that it's something that you have no control over terrifies her. And similarly, she's terrified of the movie Fire in the Sky because aliens are another thing where it's like you couldn't do it. If aliens show up, that's a whole different thing that we don't know anything about, can't do anything about.
That fucking movie, I had a panic attack watching that movie. When he's freaking underneath that table and that maple syrup dripping on, dude, I panicked.
Yeah, it's a trip. That movie trips people up. People underestimate Fire in the Sky. But that's kind of her bag. She's not as into like the monster stuff, and she's not really into the serial killers to the extent of them like being scary. She's more interested in the documentaries about what happened and why it happened, that kind of stuff. So why is it the monsters specifically
the monsters
get you?
For me, they're scary, but they're also, you know, a lot of them were the Universal monsters, especially they were monsters, but there was a lot of emotion in them. They weren't doing things random. Like you watch ghost movies and stuff like that today. I mean, those characters had tragic backstories. Sometimes I wonder, when I was smaller, I was little, I got picked on a lot. And I think just the idea of maybe like turning into the wolf, you know, and even if it's revenge, little kid based, you know, humans could do stuff to them. And they weren't like a ghost or like a Jason Voorhees, you know, just coming and, you know.
Yeah, because you specifically said that you're not into the slashers. Is it that they are so inhuman? They're so powerful that you can't really do anything to them, so that takes away some of your interest in them?
Yeah.
Is it like the simple fact they're not very relatable?
There are a few of the Halloween movies I like.
I like Michael Myers too.
There are a few Friday the 13th movies I like. Even when that was happening stuff, that didn't change my love for the Universal monsters.
Yeah, there's cool, they're scary, and you got that edge to them, but also because you can kind of see some of yourself in it, or you can see the humanity in them.
There was such humanity in their monsters. When you have a little boy, and I first started watching Universal monster stuff when, I mean, they're some of my first memories as far as like TV watching, but to be able to humanize a monster like that to where a little boy recognizes that monster isn't just a monster. He has human feelings. I remember when Frankenstein accidentally killed that little girl, just, I remember feeling sad.
Just didn't know better.
But not for the little girl, you know, he didn't know. It's something special when a movie maker can make a little boy, or, you know, or a little girl, whatever, understand his complex idea.
But it also, it was so artfully done, because I remember being haunted by that same sequence when I saw it as a kid on a shit box, black and white TV in the back room. They run out of flowers. And so he tosses the girl who had the flowers, and the girl can't swim, and she's just gone. And they don't show any of that. You hear sounds, and then silence, and your mind fills in all the gaps. Again, it messes with you in a way that it wouldn't have otherwise.
Phantom of the Opera, I want to say I've seen snippets of, but I don't think I've ever sat through the whole movie.
Everybody's seen the reveal a billion times.
Where he takes off the mask. I've seen that a million times. I don't think I've ever sat through that whole movie. Like I told you, the ones I've sat through,
it wasn't my favorite, I'll tell you that. Like,
well,
nowhere,
I mean, it's a silent movie.
It was definitely,
you know,
on the bottom end of mine.
Well, I actually kind of like the silent part to
it. Silent movies are inherently creepy.
So, just to let y'all know, last night I watched Conan the Barbarian, just because it's fucking Conan the Barbarian. I had nothing else to do. And for the first 10 minutes of the movie, after they do the Riddle of Steel speech, it's all silent. I can't realize, I miss the fact that you could just sit there and be told a deep story visually with just music and acting. No words. You don't have to have characters talk or explain their motives. You know their motives just by watching it. I kind of want to go back to watching a couple of those silent films just to see how I would feel about it. Now that I'm a grown man, And I can appreciate that more than when I was a young guy. When I was young, you kind of wanted more things explained to you. Whereas you're older, you've picked up on, you know, social cues. You've picked up on, you know, these little micro expressions people will do. And I want to go back and watch those movies and see what I can pick up.
The Phantom of the Opera. Is there any books about it?
It was based on a novella, I believe.
That's the original, the novella. And then
I believe it was in French originally as well.
And then they made it the Universal Monster?
Yeah, it was actually one of the first movies they did, if I recall correctly. Not like 1916. And then they did the version in 1926 that's most famous from Lon Chaney Jr. They did a version in 1942. And then there's been other versions. Plus, of course, the 1986 play that's very popular.
Is that a musical?
They have had music in the movies since they've had the talkies. The Claude Rains version onward tended to have music as at least the theme, where the performers are actually in the midst of a musical, didn't come about until 1986 with the Andrew Lloyd Webber play.
I know the story of it. I know the basics of it. He worked in a theater, and then this actress, it was very beautiful, and then he fell in love with her and all that crap.
And he wants her to be the star of the opera, and so he extorts and kills his way through until she is the star.
Yeah. I don't believe I ever seen a movie. I don't believe that I ever seen the musical, because I pretty much don't like musicals. So the only image I have of him is him playing the organ with the half mask. So, yeah, I don't know. Does he have powers?
No, he's just a dude. According to the original book, he's like a savant, so he can do like a billion different things really great. But in terms of actual powers, no.
Okay, so what is making a monster, just because he's deformed?
Basically, yeah. In the original book, he was born with a deformity that gave him a death's head grin. He was just described in the book as like the ugliest man who ever existed. But he had the most beautiful singing voice of any man alive, and he could do all kinds of other stuff too.
When you told me that he was considered a universal monster, I was surprised. I didn't know about that, and I just don't see why. It's like calling somebody else a monster just because it's like, is the Hunchback of Notre Dame a monster? No.
Actually, that is a universal monster too.
No way.
Yeah, it is. Also played by Lon Chaney Sr. in the 19-teens, 1920s.
They need to rethink what that defines a universal monster.
Well, they're not among the more famous of the universal monsters,
no,
but they
count. The Hunchback of Notre Dame is pretty famous. I just don't see it as a monster. I mean, it's like a monster is something that either has powers or has some kind of supernatural thing about it. They don't have supernatural thing about it. They just like ugly motherfuckers. They have like a very beautiful souls, and they can do all this thing. So I just don't see them why they can be called monsters just because they're not pretty.
Well, I think in this case it's because it's a thriller / horror movie that was produced by Universal Pictures that starred Lon Chaney Sr., that featured prosthetic makeup, a malformed lead character. A lot of the tropes of the Universal monsters were established in those Lon Chaney Sr. movies. But again, we've gone to Universal Studios. You've seen the monster Cafe. You didn't see the Phantom of the Opera or Quasimodo in there because they're not the key Universal monsters. Earlier, I repeatedly said that I had not seen a Phantom of the Opera movie, or the only one I'd seen was the Claude Rains from 42. But technically, if I recall correctly, the first one I actually saw was the 1989 slasher movie starring Freddy Krueger himself, Robert Englund, and Jill Sholin was in a bunch of horror movies in the 80s and just like a super cutie. So I did see that version as well. It was boring and overly gory and not very entertaining and easily forgettable, but I did see that one as well.
I am Dracula. A moment ago, I stumbled upon a most amazing phenomenon. Something so incredible, I mistrust my own judgment. Look.
Dracula. The very mention of the name brings to mind things so evil, so fantastic, so degrading, you wonder if it isn't all a dream, a nightmare.
Rats. Thousands. Millions of them.
But no, this is no dream. This is Dracula, the original terrifying story of a maniac and a man who lived after death, lived on human blood, took the form of a vampire bat, and lured innocent girls to a fate truly worse than death.
Dracula? Oh, what's he done to you, dear? Tell me.
He came to me. He opened the thing in his arms, and he made me drink.
Dracula, though.
Oh, Dracula, right.
You know, as much as I want to be into Dracula, and I think it goes back in part to Bela Lugosi, I just never could get into a Dracula as much. I don't think that the Dracula movies were as interesting. I kind of liked some of the stuff that Christopher Lee did, but there's just been too many funky, boring-ass Dracula movies, and I'm wondering if maybe, since most of them are the products of the stage play, I think it's maybe a boring play, and I think a lot of boring adaptations come out of that.
You know what's telling? All the best vampire movies usually don't have Dracula in them. The concept of a vampire is amazing, but I think the Dracula side is just fucking boring. There's so many more interesting set pieces for a vampire that improve upon that concept that, in comparison, I think Dracula is boring as fuck.
In part two, because if you're doing Dracula, you're stuck with all the characters related to Dracula, like Van Helsing and Mina Harker. Dracula himself is a stiff. You're saddled with a lot of baggage and a lot of expectations. But also, I thought that the Lugosi movie was boring. The Christopher Lee stuff was okay. The Langella movie I thought was pretty weak. And I was bitterly disappointed, in fact, with Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula.
Mm.
You know,
I think a lot of people were right.
I mean, you know, as much as I love Keanu Reeves, but as soon as he started opening his mouth with that funky British accent, it was all downhill from there. And that was pretty damn early in the movie.
That came out. That was contemporaneous to Interview with the Vampire, right?
I think it came out before. And Interview was a way better movie than
So Anne Rice fucking killed the shit out of those movies. So I think that also helped my generation be like, oh, why do I give a shit about fucking Dracula? Because everything else we have that's vampire is way better.
Way sexier, too. Yeah.
That's your grandfather's vampire. Yeah, we have this hipper, such a cooler stiff vampire.
Yeah. Even taking into account Dracula, right? That particular movie, Gary Oldman was a pretty good Dracula. I know a lot of girls were into him, but not the way they were into Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise as Lestat and fucking, what's his name? Like his big American debut kind of thing. Desperado.
The Assassin?
Yes. Why am I fucking blanking, man? Puss in Boots.
Yeah. I keep wanting to say Benicio del Toro, my fucking asshole.
I know, it's like, no.
The Assassin, right?
Right, that guy. So, right. So even when you did have a solid, sexy Dracula, there was already somebody upstaging him that fit better with the culture and had more interesting things to say.
I'm Googling, man, chill out. Because he was just in something. God, we're fucking idiots, dude. And the fact this is taking me so long to Google because there are other movies called Assassin.
Antonio Banderas.
Antonio Ben-fucking-Daris. God.
And that was not me. That was Google. The big thing I remember him debuting in was a documentary, Truth or Dare, Madonna, because she lusted after him because he was in all of the... Fuck your face. What's his name? The guy who does all the gay movies.
Rip Torn? No. I don't know, dude.
Almodovar. He did Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down and shit. And he was like one of the muses for Almodovar back in the day. But anyway, so when you got Antonio Banderas and shit, it's tough for old Gary Oldman to compete, I think.
Yeah, man. That had Christian Slater, too. Man, what's her name?
Winona Ryder was the main reason why I wanted to see that movie. And I thought that she was one of the saving graces, more the fact, though, her running around in the see-through negligee.
And then it had what's her name, who ended up being Mary Jane Watson.
Kirsten Dunst was in Lestat.
That was Interview with the Vampire, dude. I mean, she was with Lestat.
Right. That's what I'm saying, though. It felt like Dracula was a place where a lot of people's careers were going downhill, where you look at Lestat, that was a high point for a lot of those people. You know, it proved that Tom Cruise had range. It helped to popularize Brad Pitt. It really helped to introduce Antonio Banderas to the people. It introduced Kirsten Dunst, where we came to realize Keanu Reeves can't act as a British person. We had Anthony Hopkins shitting on his legacy as Hannibal Lecter by playing Van Helsing. You had Francis Ford Coppola himself doing a bunch of ripped off Sam Raimi camera tricks, ruining his reputation by doing this dumbass movie. So, yeah.
So Bram Stoker's Dracula was 92. Interview with the Vampire was 94.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty close.
Yeah. Yeah, plus they did that shitty Frankenstein movie around the same time that was obviously a wannabe knockoff of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, but it wasn't actually at Universal, so they had De Niro and Kenneth Branagh, and that was some boring-ass fucking shit. I did not care. That was, like, I think the worst adaptation of Frankenstein.
I don't think I ever saw it.
Don't. It's no good. It just doesn't work. It's fairly faithful to the book, but it just doesn't have any life. It doesn't have any juice to it. It feels like them trying to do their Coppola movie, and it just doesn't work.
Well, I read the book, and I saw the movies. Obviously, the Bram Stoker being one of my favorite movies of Dracula, not my favorite movies, of course. And I really liked that movie, not because of the actors, but the actor who played Dracula as
Gary Oldman.
Yeah. One of my favorite phrases of all movies is when he's at the movie theater with Mina, and then he say,
"I have crossed oceans of time."
I remember the first time I heard that on that movie, I was like, ooh, it gives me chills. I like the character, okay, Dracula. I think it's a good concept, but it's just like Superman. You know, it's too powerful. It's too many superpowers, and it always bugs me too because they always talk about his immortality, but they have so many weaknesses. But at the same time, they portray him as this all-powerful, you know, fly, transform, gaze power, this extremely powerful thing, and it just... just like Superman.
You talked a little bit about Dracula. Which ones did you like? How much did you like him?
There were so many different ones.
My favorite, I bet you I can tell you, but I don't think it was a universal picture, and that's what we're supposed to be.
No, it's all right. What's your favorite Dracula?
Dracula movie was The Night Flyer.
The Stephen King one?
Yeah.
I've never actually seen that one.
Oh, man, it's awesome. Well, I don't want to tell you about it because I got it. Next time you're over, next time I come over, I can bring it. Man, that's good. Dracula was all right. I liked the Dracula movies. I don't think Bela Lugosi was my favorite Dracula. It was probably somebody like Christopher or somebody that was my favorite.
Yeah. So did you like the Hammer stuff too then? All those British imports were Hammer with Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing and all of them.
Yeah, it could have been Peter Cushing. I think he did some vampire movies.
I think he tended to play Van Helsing, but he might have done Dracula at some point.
Well, yeah, I could get confused. A lot of those movies I saw in the theater. So on some of them, I can't remember if I ever saw them in the movie house or the theater. Because, I mean, you're talking about somebody that's seen those movies probably hundreds of times by the time the 70s were done with. He was still making a lot of those movies. I think in the early 80s he made a few that were kind of on the B-side of life. Both those guys.
So what about you on Dracula? Are you making progress?
Yeah, I was checking on something because each time I would see the Dracula movie, the star was different. They always had a different Dracula.
Yeah, because there was a lot of Dracula movies that were, it wasn't Bela Lugosi. I think his first one was in the 30s, and I think he made one in 42 or 43. But then a whole bunch of different people did Dracula movies.
Well, I'm cheating. I'm looking at, because they had The Son of Dracula, The House of Dracula, Dracula's Daughter, the same what they did all the other ones, you know, between The Phantoms, The Mummy, The Creature, they always had different.
And, well, my favorite mummy movie.
Let's not even get into the drumming just yet. That's that one's, I think, going to be a bit of a tangent, so hold off on that for just a sec.
Well, it's Boris Karloff, and it's the color one where...
Yeah, see, Lon Chaney did The House of Dracula. I kind of wanted to go make a comment about, you know, how I was talking about all the movies. There was always a woman involved, and as the era kept changing and they kept repeating the movie, whether it was a second or a sequel, or then another producer director made it, but they were still the same, and they always had a woman involved with it. But then as it got more up into the 70s and 80s, and it was more sexual, they were always, you know, it's...
Well, I think, like, it was always sexual. It just became more overtly sexual.
More verbally.
There was always... I mean, let's face it. The vampire movies were sexual. Creature of the Black Lagoon, it was sexual. Think about the story and how it ends.
Well, and The Shape of Water just won an Oscar, and it's about her fucking the fish man, you know?
Yeah. Oh, well, have to watch that when it comes out. See what that's about.
Hey, man, it won the Oscar for Best Director and Best Movies. Yeah. That's some fine fish fucking.
Yeah.
Well, but also, it's one of those movies kind of disconnected. It's like a bad dream or something, the way you have these moments, but then it's kind of disconnected. That's one of those movies when you watch it, at the end, you kind of sitting there. I mean, now people talked about it a lot, but when I first watched it, I'm sitting there going, what the hell is this about? You know, the way he did it, it kind of leaves it open if you're trying to figure out what the damn thing's about. Is it about the love story, or is it about the horrors of man and corporations? What the hell is it about?
Saw Dracula.
Fantastic film. Even to this day, it holds up.
The Lugosi one?
Yeah.
I liked it. I prefer Wolfman, though. I remember Wolfman.
I'm with you. Wolfman's my favorite.
That one, I like that one just for the fact that, because to me, I've never been a fan of vampires, because it's kind of like, blah, blah, and I go to sleep. And Wolfman is, it's in us already. Like, it's those, that's already deep rooted in us. You just need that one callus of a bite from a werewolf to bring out the beast in you. And that's like that dark side of someone. I always love that aspect. I could never really, I could never be a vampire. It's just so, like, I don't know, prissy. They're just,
I honestly think that vampires and werewolves are kind of telling the same story, but one is, like you say, more romanticized,
yes,
more sensual, and one is more visceral, more masculine.
Which is why the Underworld movies did fantastic numbers, because they kind of do fit together. You kind of feel like, yeah, but you know what, those two could mix.
And then Twilight tainted it all.
Talking about Twilight too.
Well, but think about that. I mean, that's all that Twilight was too, was vampires and werewolves, essentially.
Yeah. No.
True Blood also was all about vampires and werewolves.
Yeah.
For some reason, all right, there's all these other monsters out there. That the only thing, I mean, True Blood added some witches. I think Twilight did as well.
Son of Dracula. That's the way Jenny Williams was killed?
Yes. Find something?
Animal tracks.
Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
Oh, don't hand me that. You're just wasting your time.
The wolf bit you, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he did. You wouldn't want to run away with a murderer, would you?
Oh, Larry, you're not. You know you're not.
I killed Bela. I killed Richardson. If I stay here any longer, you can't tell who'll be next.
We never talked to you about the Wolfman.
Boy meets girl, girl meets boy. You know, the monsters, you know, because the Wolfman is always trying to get to a woman. And, you know, and get her to change over, like Dracula, you know, Dracula's daughter, all that kind of stuff. I didn't get to see all of the Mummy movies. I didn't really like. I liked the first one. It was
Werewolf.
Yeah, you know, the Wolfman. I always want to call it the Werewolf. Well, that's
the Wolfman was out of all the movies that they showed on TV, they showed those the most.
Yeah.
They were on more. If you want to take them, if you're taking the Universal Monsters, Wolfman must have been a favorite because in the 60s and the 70s, they showed the Wolfman movies more than they showed any of the other Universal Monster movies. And if anything, Creature of the Black Lagoon was probably the least shown. Out of all the Universal characters, Creature of the Black Lagoon was my favorite. But it was the character that was my favorite, not the movie. My favorite movies were The Wolfman. And that was Lon Chaney Jr. I just thought they were too cool because of the stop action that they used for the thing. And I just thought The Wolfman was cool, you know?
So you mean The Wolfman, not werewolf, like Remus Lupin in Harry Potter. The Wolfman, I don't know too much about it. I saw a couple movies, the Benicio del Toro. I know that it was a period movie for which I like those movies. I just don't remember the movie too well. And it's just Werewolf in London or The Wolfman in London. Or the most famous one, the Michael J. Fox, Teenage of the Wolfman. Pretty much that's it. Pretty disadvantaged character, I think, because he's just an animal. And I guess he's super strong with his teeth. And if you're afraid of, like, wolf, nothing special. I just don't find it that fascinating to remember a lot about it. It's just a character. I mean, it's just a persona of the Wolfman or the werewolf. It just doesn't seem too appealing. It's just nothing to it. It's like the opposite of Dracula. Like, Dracula, you have all these superpowers. And the man wolf, the werewolf or whatever, is like the Batman, I guess. Or, like, I don't know, some less character.
Yeah, same thing. I don't have as many. I've loved Wolfman as a kid, but I just don't remember enough of the old black and white Universal movie as I do, say, Frankenstein.
And see, as a kid,
Wolfman movie, you know what I mean? I don't remember the plot of that shit. But Wolfman, werewolves in general, again, probably have more. So that was one thing with Wolfman, right? Who the Wolfman was didn't really ever seem to matter, right?
Outside of the original movie, I would say, yeah.
Right, because it's not like Dracula. Dracula was a guy, whereas Wolfman was just, it's more about a werewolf. So you have, you know, Werewolf in London and all that shit afterwards. I remember all that stuff coming out. But as much as I like werewolves, I for some reason the movies never really resonated with me. I don't know what it is.
And for me, I had that the book on the makeup, and I remember them having a big chapter on how they did the Wolfman transformation and how revolutionary it was back in the day. And of course, I made the association Lon Chaney Sr., Lon Chaney Jr., so I like the idea of there being a legacy. So the Wolfman was like my favorite monster as a kid before I discovered like zombies, for instance. You know, I really prefer werewolves to the Wolfman. I love werewolf movies on the rare instances where they're made well. It's actually one of the major reasons why I'm so, it's such a bone of contention for me to have fast zombies. Because once you've got something that's like moving really quick and it's feral and it just like jumps on you and it's ripping you to pieces and shit, that to me should be a werewolf, not a zombie. And I think that the big problem is that werewolves are so hard to realize on the screen that it's just easier to have a fast zombie act like a werewolf than to just do a werewolf.
Like you're crossing your streams at that point.
Exactly. So for me, it's just kind of a cheap thing. But some of my favorite horror movies are werewolf movies. For instance, Gingersnaps, I fucking love. I think that's a great flick. I love designs for movies like The Howling. The upright werewolves are so fucking cool looking. And I love them in comic books because it's much easier to pull them off there than virtually anywhere. So I love the concept of a werewolf, but every time I try to invest in the Wolfman, like me and Paquita actually tried to watch the original Wolfman. I'd recorded it off cable, and it was just so damn slow. It was super boring, and I was really looking forward to the Benicio del Toro one that came out a few years ago, actually about 8 years ago now. We saw that in the theater, and it was such a piece of shit. That movie was just garbage. And if they, you know, of all things you recalled, I don't know if you ever saw Wolf with Jack Nicholson and James Spader.
I mean, I know that I've seen the infamous scenes of the horrible jumping and the pissing on James Spader in the bathroom and stuff like that.
Where, you know, fat old Jack Nicholson is jumping on a trampoline in werewolf makeup at James Spader. It's fucking pathetic. And they had a similar situation with the Wolfman where it's Del Toro versus fucking Anthony Hopkins again, fucking 20 some odd years after he was Van Helsing, trying to do the you know, CGI trampoline jumping. It was a fucking mess. It was terrible. There were a couple couple of decent scenes, mostly transformation scenes. One in particular I liked where they've got him bound at like an operating theater, you know, where they're trying to watch an operation being performed, and he transforms during that. That was cool. But I was amazed that a guy like Benicio del Toro, who's so known for being these crazy, wacky characters, had such a flat, dull, drab performance in that movie. And I think it was because he was trying to do Lon Chaney Jr. And he was kind of a laconic presence as well. It worked for Chaney where it just did not work for del Toro at all. And in fact, I was really afraid about the Captain America movie because Joe Johnson had done Wolfman before that. And I was like, if it's anything like the Wolfman, they're going to ruin Captain America. God damn it. I was one of the reasons why I was so down on that movie before it came out.
Yeah. Well, the great thing about Wolf was that it gave us one of the best Seinfeld episodes of all time.
I'm trying to remember what was it? I know they talked about it, but I don't recall. All I'm thinking about is Wolfman Has NARS, which is the wrong property.
No, it's where Jerry keeps shaving his chest and he goes on a date with that girl and she sees him shave his chest, so he has to keep shaving his chest, and they're going on the fucking Kramer reality tour where he has the bus where he, no, the Peterman reality tour, because he sold all of his stories to Peterman.
Right.
So taking people on a bus ride through the city saying, hey, this is where fucking Loomis is, or whatever his ridiculous friends were. And at the very end, Jerry's been on the bus so long that his chest hair is starting to grow out, and he kind of Wolfman's out and he's running through the woods, scratching, howling. Ooh, that feels good. That was a parody on Jack Nicholson's Wolf.
Well, and I think the original Wolfman, really.
Probably. I took it as a knockoff on Wolf because I think they were probably fairly close together, but whatever.
Maybe so. Maybe.
And I think there were a few. Was there a, there had to be a Saturday Night Live skit making fun of that shit, too.
Oh, surely.
So Benicio del Toro Wolfman movie was terrible.
I liked it.
Gonna disagree with you on that.
Really? Come. I liked it. Bring it. See,
what did you hate about it?
Everything about it, essentially. The only thing I liked was the sequence where they're in the surgery room, where all the doctors are like watching him as he's all bound up in the chair, and they're not expecting anything to happen, and then he wolfs out, and they're freaking out. It reminded me a lot of American Werewolf in London, but I like that situation where you're in this sterile environment, you assume nothing can go wrong, and all of a sudden there's a wolf man in the room. Holy shit. And if I remember correctly, he tore ass on those scientists that were in the room, right?
Yeah.
The rest of it I thought was plotting, especially the big battle at the end between the two wolves was laughable.
I thought it was a little bit short, the wolf battle at the end.
Frank's a zombie guy, so he's not going
to
really...
He needs something to move slow.
Yeah. It needs to eat brains. Because if you talk about
that fight bounce around and stuff, when they portrayed Anthony Hopkins killing all them gypsies in the beginning, that dude was hauling ass as he was moving. Gypsies were flying everywhere. I really enjoyed that movie.
Bandages right up to the top of his head, all around his ears.
Laura's worried about Griffin.
I had a terrible feeling last night. I felt he was in desperate trouble.
He meddled in things men should leave alone.
Not the slightest clue.
That's where the clues are. He wasn't leaving anything to chance.
There must be a way back. God knows there's a way back.
What are you doing? Help!
Just leave me alone.
It's the stranger with the goggles. He's gone mad.
You're crazy to know who I am, aren't you? All right, I'll show you.
That made me a madness when you're peering through the keyholes and peeping through the curtains. And now you'll suffer for it.
But why? Why do it, Griffin?
Just a scientific experiment at first, to do something no other men in the world had done. Suddenly I realized the power I held, the power to rule, to make the world a robber at my feet, power to walk into the gold vaults of the nations, into the secrets of kings, into the holy of holies.
The Invisible Man?
Never saw it. I've always seen the... That's one I've never seen.
I saw it. Didn't really do anything for me.
I remember trying to watch it as a kid, losing interest in it. So I like the look of him. I thought that the bandages with the glasses was cool, but I couldn't get it through it. Yeah.
Maybe scenes here and there.
Well, like, what about different incarnations of the Invisible Man, though? Not necessarily the Universal one.
Oh, Jesus. What was the Kevin Bacon one?
I know, Hollow Man. I think really Hollow Man is like the Invisible Man movie for a lot of people over the last few decades.
And I don't think I ever fucking saw Hollow Man. I just know they showed Kevin's Bacon's bacon or whatever. That was the fucking joke they showed.
Yeah, was that before or after Wild Things?
You know, I don't know.
Kevin Bacon was like the Ewan McGregor of his time.
That's a fucking sick burn on Kevin Bacon, too.
But yeah, I mean, actually, I saw Hello Man with Mr. Fix-It and Pussycat back in the day. And we liked it okay. I saw various Invisible Man type movies as a kid, and I guess I watched some of the original one. It's hard to do anything with Invisible Man. I think Hollow Man probably did it as well as anybody's ever going to.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. That's probably the best modern interpretation of it, even though, again, I've never seen it. I remember the look, just like with Phantom of the Opera, I know the look, the trench coat, the bandages and everything. I mean, I get that.
That's a pretty awesome concept. I saw the Hollow Man. To me, I think that's one of the most interesting powers that one can have. Like, flying, come on, who give a shit about flying? I mean, being invisible, that's a fucking badass power right there. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you can do. I mean, can he turn it on and turn it off? Or he just stays
invisible? My recollection of the original movie was that he was stuck invisible, and that's why he had to wear the bandages and stuff, because you have the curse of being trapped in an invisible form, and then the corruption that comes in when you realize how you can abuse that condition.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing of true of the Hollow Man.
Well, see, and that's pretty fascinating, too. You go into the morals of it, how much you can get away with it, because a lot of times humans are stopped by this ethic, oh, what about if I get caught, like,
the ethics is the fear of repercussion. Well,
exactly,
not the ethics.
And that's what it's the ethics too, because you are bound by your ethics of doing right or wrong. When you don't have that well defined line of what is right and what is wrong, and you can get away with a lot of stuff because you're not seeing that shift, that kind of shift your perception of the world.
Well, and it's interesting too, because there's actually been comedies that have been done over the years where guys use their invisibility to go into women's showers and things like that. And from a guy's perspective, that's a sex comedy. From a woman's perspective, that's voyeurism, that's stalking, that's an object of terror. It's all a matter of perspective. So
well,
I think
there's stalking. I mean, there's so much stuff you can do. Imagine all those places where you can be undetected, like all those places that they're forbidden for humans to go inside, or like science stuff, or just go jump in the fucking plane and go someplace without paying nothing, you know. And that goes to the fact that, is it wrong? Well, yeah, technically, yeah, but you're not harming nobody. Sneaking into hearing other people's secrets about like companies or governments and stuff like that. I mean, there's unlimited. Why you want to waste all that power to just go sneak and see naked chicks? Maybe I'll do it with like Ethan Hawke.
It's interesting because there are so many inherent story avenues. Invisible Man is probably one of the evergreen concepts among the Universal Monsters, I would say, because of that.
I saw the Invisible Man movies over and over again. Hell, it seemed to me every dead gum Sunday, on the Sunday movie, that's Invisible Man or The Fly was on.
So did you like The Invisible Man, or do you think maybe it was just cheap and they ran it a lot?
I actually did think The Invisible Man was kind of cool, but mostly because I wished I could do that. I thought The Fly was Vincent Price, the first one, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Because I know there was another one that was done later that I liked. The first, I really felt sorry for him.
Did you have any thoughts on The Invisible Man?
No, I didn't see too many of those.
Georgie, where are you? You're amongst friends. There's no danger.
Friends like you are a great comfort.
Where are you, Jeffrey? Show yourself.
I'd have a little difficulty doing that just now.
Where are you hiding?
Perhaps that will show you where your friend is hiding.
It's like Vincent Price. My favorite ones was...
Talk about the Wax Museum?
No, that's one. This was a series, you know, where he was a doctor and... It was kind of like...
Oh, Abominable Dr. Fives?
Yeah. Dr. Fives. Man, I thought they were just too cool. I think there was three of them, and two of them I saw in the movie, and one of them I saw on TV. So I've got all of them. They're part of my collection. And a lot of the others, you know. I like that one that he did with... Man, it's the titles that are escaping.
House on Haunted Hill, 13 Ghosts.
No, I've got the House on the Haunted Hill, but I also got this one. This was I think it might have been called a comedy, a horse. But this is the one he did. There was three stars in it with him. They were all getting old by then. It was kind of a spoof horror movie. A little fat guy and a talk like this.
No worries. I think we're kind of off the trail anyway. Can you tell me why specifically?
That was a Universal picture, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
You
got to do something. You've got to save my daughter's life.
Dr. Vollin. Can we get Dr. Vollin?
You're the one chance she's got.
A month ago, I didn't know you.
And now I owe my life to you.
You mustn't see her again.
Death is my talisman, Mr. Chapman.
I want you should change my face.
I can do it.
Maybe if a man looks ugly, he does ugly things.
You are saying something profound. A man with a face so hideously ugly. No! And please try to remember, should anything happen to me, you remain the hideous monster that you are. The doctor is fascinated by death and pain and how much pain a man can endure.
Well, I do agree with him that Dr. Vollin is a little mad.
I tell you, it's dangerous to be under this man's roof.
I can't use my hand to do it. Your hand is used to torture. Your hand must do it. My brain? Your hand.
You monster. You like to torture.
I like to torture.
It's as if we were all in a tomb.
There is now no way of getting up.
You will live in this place forever and ever. It'll be the perfect marriage. You will never be separated. Never.
When I was a kid, they were making the models.
Yeah, the Aurora models.
The old models. Me and my brothers, we were all doing them and fixing them up. I mean, we detailed them things to the T. The creature had the green color with the gills and all that, and then the fins down its back. We had the Frankensteins. We had the Phantom of the Opera. The one that I thought was the coolest, my brother did that one, was the Hunchback of Notre Dame. And it actually,
and this was the silent film version of it? The Lon Chaney version?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've seen that, but I was just talking about the model.
No, I'm saying that the model was based on that version.
Yeah, on that version, the original black and white one. The way we painted the details with him after they whipped him, I mean, it had those lines in the model part with the hunchback, and it had the detail with the shirt split open, and we'd take the red paint and do it, you know, made it look like the blood coming off his back.
Those movie monster models, was it Reveille that came out with those?
Aurora.
Aurora, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, they didn't come out until the 60s, but it was the early 60s. Man, they hung around for like ever because they were still selling them like in the 70s, I know. So
I believe they were still around the 80s.
I know on Amazon you can still buy some of that stuff.
Well, what I was talking about, the detail that we were doing on the Hunchback, they had him crouched down on that turntable, whatever the hell, I forget what they called it. That model would actually turn, and that's what was so cool about it, because all the rest of them were just
static
models. But this one, you could take the Hunchback and turn him around.
Really display it.
Yeah, do the whole nine yards with it, and it was cool. Boy, I tell you, we had
them
things
for
years.
There was one of them that had a working guillotine.
I think that was one of the Vincent Price ones, right?
You know, I can't really remember. You'd drop it and the head would drop off in the basket. But I can't remember which one that was, because it wasn't Vincent Price standing there. It was a guillotine. It may have been from one of the Poe movies or something. I think the figure with it was just wearing the black.
It had the black hood.
Yeah.
Over it, yeah.
But yeah, I remember everybody.
That, yeah, because
The only one of those models I ever made was the Creature of the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, because it had that spot where we could just keep sticking the head back in there, and then as soon as that little thing would drop, it just, you know.
Yeah, until finally you wore out the
guillotine part.
No, the guillotine didn't. The head was the first thing to go. The head had that little piece of neck or whatever it was that went into the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And after like you hit it enough times, it would just fall off anyway.
Couldn't make it stay. It just kept dropping off.
Did you guys watch the Edgar Allan Poe movies?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and when I first saw them, I was really into Poe. I don't know, I guess I was 11, 12 years old. I read his stories. I thought they were awesome. When Vincent Price did all of those movies, I watched the movies. And, of course, that was the thing about when Vincent Price did Poe, he pretty much kept it true to the book. Whether it was him or the director, I don't know. But Price was a serious actor, and it wasn't until he got much older that he started doing a lot of comedies. I think the first Vincent Price horror movie I ever saw was House on the Haunted Hill, and I saw that in the movie theater on a Saturday matinee, and it scared the crap out of me. I was about 9 years old. But then again, it wasn't long before that I watched Wizard of Oz, and it scared the crap out of me, too. I remember hiding behind the couch. I was 8 or 9 years old.
Edgar Allan Poe, I didn't know much about it. There was one movie that came out. When I tried to watch it, I did not understand it one bit. I was just like, what in the hell is this? It was so crazy. That's why I don't even remember it. I remember about him, and I remember there was a movie about him and movies that were done all about it. I just never went and saw any of them because the first one just threw me away. Later on, when I have read about it, then I kind of understand because the guy was just a complete wacko. The stuff that I have read, just small parts, not really in his books, or just something where I look up stuff about his books and read a paragraph of it, I'm lost. I was like, man, how could anybody understand what the hell he was doing? Not me. I didn't understand a damn thing about him, except he was just a nut.
Who was that?
Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, well, yeah, but I was really heavy into literature when I was young, so I read everything Poe did. I read the Iliad and the Odyssey, Call of the Wild. All those I read when I was like 11 years old. I saw The Pit and the Pendulum movie before I read The Pit and the Pendulum. And it was actually reading it was what made me understand it. But, you know, it's a matter of age, too, because you're younger than I am. I mean, I didn't really understand heroin or getting high or anything like that, but I knew Poe was an addict. And I realized that there was a certain amount of insanity that, you know, the stuff that he wrote, he actually imagined. Like The Raven, I think that was the first one I ever read. And let's face it, middle of the night, there's nobody around, and you got a black raven rap, rap, rapping at your window. Hey, that might give you the chills now. Birds aren't supposed to be waltzing around. Birds go to sleep at night as soon as it gets dark. And you realize that if that was really going on, if he wasn't imagining it, it's because the raven saw some light inside the room. He actually saw his reflection in the window pane. But I guess if you're high on heroin and half nuts anyway, you know, all by yourself.
I think that's why he wrote that kind of stuff, because he was just, I guess he was just dreaming it, and that's why he wrote it.
There's a lot of debate on that, but chances are he was hallucinating,
yeah,
because he was,
yeah,
you know, drinking and doing heroin, all kinds of stuff.
I was trying to watch a movie that he did from his book when I was in eighth grade, where we had to read The Tale of Two Cities. Oh, my God. I got through the first chapter, and I flunked that year because I didn't read it. I didn't like it. God, it bored the hell out of me.
Well,
and I just went, and then when I see that kind of thing with Edgar Allan Poe, I'm going, oh, crud, who's another? See, I can't even tell you who wrote Tale of Two Cities, but it's supposed to be one of the stories like Romeo and Juliet.
There was a lot of stuff in literature classes that we had to read that I kind of enjoyed reading it, but at the same time, I wasn't taken by the story necessarily, and some of them are classics. Remember when I wrote Moby Dick? I read every bit of it, couldn't wait to read more of it, but when the story was over, I realized I didn't like it.
So hey, Mr. Fix-It, mm-hmm. Did you watch any of these old black and white horror movies?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, dude. It's the same channel 39. The late show would be...
Oh, so you caught them on the other end of it, not
yeah.
The early morning showings.
No, because that's when they would show... I mean, that's where I was introduced, like, The Last Unicorn.
That was on, like, Friday nights.
That for us would be, like, Saturday night.
Oh, Saturday night.
Because you got to remember the TV channel.
Ironically, I thought that was too girly, and I always turned the channel.
Oh, no. The first time I ever saw that was when they showed the Red Bull, and I'm like... Whatever this is, I have to watch completely now because that fucking Red Bull is amazing. But I just remember, you know, because we had three channels, the three main channels would turn off at like, what, midnight one?
They would play the national anthem
and it would end. So you had 20, 26, and 39 that would stay up. But the other two channels would do like religious shit and all kinds of weird shit. 39 would be the only one that would have the late show. And I guess those were for like security guards. So I still remember me and my friends would stay up till whatever it came, 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning. And they would always show just like, that's where I first saw Night of the Living Dead. I remember seeing Frankenstein there. I don't know. Would they still be considered classics at the time? They were still relatively not that old.
Well, which one would you say?
Well, because I remember the first one.
I mean, Night of the Living Dead, '68 was in the early 80s was like maybe 15 years.
Yeah, so true. But like, I remember seeing like the thing from the Black Lagoon in color on that. Because I remember thinking, what, they got these in color too? But that was just right where they were starting to turn black and whites into colors.
Okay.
And putting them on there. And I remember watching them and I really dug it. Like, it was, I was a young kid. I was already reading G.I. Joe comics. So this was just something more to entertain me.
Creature of the Black Lagoon was very G.I. Joe-ish for that time. Like that adventure squad going in the jungle.
Because honestly, the ones that really stuck with me was the Creature of the Black Lagoon, Frankenstein, and The Fly. I remember seeing The Fly, and that one really was like... So mine were more science-based, where I love the fact that it was science, and then science go on a ride type thing, where it's like bad science. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And so I'm already reading G.I. Joe comics, and my G.I. Joe and Transformer comics, and I'm already transitioning over to like X-Men. Like, I'm starting to pick up like mainstream stuff, because at the time, you stuck to what the playground had. And G.I. Joe comics and Transformer comics were at the high end, and then everything else kind of just went down from there because everybody knew G.I. Joe because you had the toys and the cartoons and stuff. But I remember just the Creature from the Black Lagoon. I guess that one's the one that sticks with me the most because he wasn't a bad guy. It's just it was his nature. You can pretend to be something that you're not, which I always thought serial killers were. They were like this creepy guy that attacked you and he did it because he got off on it more. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't his nature. It was just something.
That's one of my problems with serial killers is it's small people who pick a target that's weaker than them that they can make them feel
like
strong.
Schizoid and those movies like that. They were revenge fantasy movies where the monster ones, it's just their nature. They don't know they're doing bad. This is just who they are. This is their key role in the world, in the universe. So I was kind of like, well, that's kind of cool. Like, you know, that you can have this, what I would consider a monster on his end. He's like, no, this is just what I fucking do every day. This is my everyday life. And I remember as a kid realizing that and thinking that was so fucking cool. But I mean, we didn't have access to it. Again, my mom was more of an artsy. Because of her, I saw movies like the Pink Flamingos and shit like that. So, like, my mom would bring in Highlander, and we watched Highlander, and then she would bring in Brazil.
Dude, let's be honest. Highlander's one of the greatest movies.
Oh, yeah, no.
You're not going to get all your information.
But she would bring in movies like that. So, I remember seeing, like, my mom
my
would
dad,
take us
My dad see- actually texted me 4 months ago, and he's like, oh, my God, you're right. I totally didn't realize how good a movie. My first, like, superhero.
So. Highlander was one of the first movies I ever rented when we got our first VCR.
Yeah, me too.
Like, my mom, we watched Aliens. I still remember watching Aliens on our little TV in the kitchen because, you know, we would have dinner. Mm-hmm. And you had the little TV in the kitchen and we would all watch it. And I remember watching Aliens for the first time with my mom. It was on regular TV. She would take us to the video store. Now, the weird thing is those classic monster movies you couldn't really find in a video store.
You didn't really see those much on video.
No,
that's true.
You would see all the new stuff. Now, if you did see those, it would be in the little boxes in the far right
corner. Good time videos.
Like oldies. You would see nothing but old people kind of shuffling their feet, like bouncing around.
I don't think, you know, with you saying that, I don't think I ever saw a Universal's Monster movie on tape. I think I saw them. Now I have them on DVD and Blu-ray, but I don't think I ever saw one of those that we rented. I think you're right.
Yeah, any exposure I had to this was through TV.
Yeah, and I think that is part of the appeal too, is that it's something you could find on your own.
Yeah,
people didn't introduce to it. It was something that you had access to, and you kind of discovered them on your own, and it was yours because of that.
Yeah, my mom liked horror movies too, so I did see a bunch through her. I remember, God, she rented Fright Night when that came out on video.
Oh, I remember my mom taking us to go see Critters.
Holy shit, dude.
She took us to see Critters, and I was just like...
In Fright Night, where Evil Ed is, like, going after Roddy McDowall, you know, and he's got them buck teeth.
No.
Dude, that scared the shit out of me.
Science couldn't explain it, but there it was, alive in the deep, deep waters of the Amazon. A throwback to a creature that had existed 100 million years ago, immensely strong and destructive. A woman's beauty, the bait that brought it out of its lair. See underwater thrills never photographed before. See Titanic underwater battles never dreamed of before in this most terrifying of the science fiction adventures.
Creature from the Black Lagoon, the first one that they did, was a black and white movie. Mm-hmm.
And so you remember the sequels too, then?
Oh yeah. They had they named them differently. I just were calling them the Lizard Man and some other things like that. But just the original one I'm talking about was the black and white one, because I used to like watching it over and over and over when it came back out on like Saturday morning TV or certain channels where they'll show the flicks. There's even when I used to watch the reruns of Elvira.
And oh, sure.
They were showing the old original movies like that, and then they would show a creature from the Black Lagoon, but that blonde. And I think she was playing like she was a model or something in that first one. It's been a real long time since I've seen it. But it's always, every time they'd have somebody like that, like any kind of monster, there was always a woman involved.
Yeah, it was a theme, it's true.
The underwater photography.
Beautiful.
Dude, beautiful for now, if you would do that in black and white. I mean, just think about back then. And
how difficult that would have been. I mean, I'm sure that was risky.
Yeah. And
with the equipment that they had.
Everything's clear. It was just, I love that movie. I can watch that movie now and be like, hey, that's great. So.
And what about those? They did a series of those, right? Did the series amount to anything? Or was it just that the first one was great and the rest were just the fumes?
I don't remember ever seeing anything but the first Gilman. Yeah. Or Creature from Black Lagoon.
And did that creature actually mean anything to you, or was it just about the story of the one movie?
Just cool. Cool monster.
And same with you, Fix It?
Yep.
And I'll be honest with you, of all of these characters, I think, I'm not sure if I've ever actually watched Creature from the Black Lagoon. I know they made like three of them. I didn't even know that they made three Creature of the Black Lagoon movies. I basically know him from Monster Squad, honestly.
Yeah, Monster Squad.
But you said you actually really liked the original one, right?
I said there are of the movies whose scenes still kind of flash in my head, I've got probably more vivid scenes from Creature of the Black Lagoon than of definitely Invisible Man or Phantom of the Opera, right? I mean, I really like the acting in Creature of the Black Lagoon. No, don't fucking remember that shit. But
yeah, but some of those shots where he's underwater, that's very memorable.
Did ST3K do one of the Mystery Science Theater? Did they Creature of the Black Lagoon?
I don't think they did the original. I think they did one of the sequels, maybe.
Okay, so then I've probably seen one of the sequels via Mystery Science Theater 3000.
And I never even saw that one. And I used to watch ST3K, but I don't think I ever saw any of the creatures. The closest I got was like Gamera.
Oh, dude, the Gamera ones were always great.
Can you tell me why the creature from the Black Lagoon was your favorite, though, of the monsters?
Look, we're bio kids. It's not hard to imagine the creature of the Black Lagoon coming up out of them trees. Look at the moss in the trees. He could be coming up right out of that ditch right now. He was a creature from my hood, you know what I mean? That's what was so cool. And he looked cool. The movies weren't all that great. You know, I got all three of them suckers. None of those movies were that great, and the TV show really sucked eggs. When it was new on TV, I remember watching it every week, but I never thought it was all that great, or that guy was playing such a great creature of the Black Lagoon, because let's face it, he didn't have the fish face, and he didn't have the big claws and all that stuff, you know? The creature was cool, and you know, I'm a water baby. I mean, I'm from the Gulf Coast of Texas. Maybe that's one of the reasons why I liked Aquaman, and that's probably why I liked the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, I remember you taking me to all those marine movies when we were growing up, too. Over museum, was that you was always taking us to see?
Oh, yeah, it was Natural Science Museum. We watched them in 3D.
Another movie I ended up seeing because of you, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a day when you took me on your route when you were stocking movie theaters.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, we would have those movie marathons on weekends where I took you and your brothers around to all the different, because I could get us in for free. We'd go to almost any movie theater in town for free.
I missed out on most of that, though. The one day that I remember, though, you took me on your route while you were stocking the various concession stands, and while you would be working, I'd go off and watch a movie, or as much of the movies I could get.
I think that was like on a Friday or whatever, because you were coming over that weekend. And I just decided to pick you up once I was on the side of town and haul you around with me.
But if I remember correctly, that was the day that I saw most of the Monster Squad, a decent chunk of the Untouchables, and I want to say the Living Daylights, but when I checked it chronologically, it doesn't seem like that matches up too good. But do you guys have any affection for the Monster Squad? I know you guys were probably a little old for the Monster Squad. Do you guys even remember what I'm talking about?
I've got the movie. No, the Monster Squad. I've got that one movie, the Monster Squad. When we go watch those movies, it was always movies y'all wanted to go see. I mean, you saw a lot of movies before almost anybody else in town. And I can't even remember all of them. One of them was King Solomon Mine. And
that wasn't me. I saw that at the Dollar Show.
Well, maybe it was the other. When there are two of those, there's two of them, right?
Yeah, but if I remember correctly, I saw them both at the Dollar Show.
If it wasn't that one, then I'll bet it was Nightmare on Elm Street.
That's a possibility, because I saw Dream Warriors with y'all. You said you saw the Creature number movie quite a bit. Was that for the model? Was that just because you had an affection for that specific movie? Why'd you see that one so often?
The movie, when it first came out, when we first went to the movie theaters.
When it first came out,
when I first saw it, like we were talking about it, when it was at the movie theaters, and then when it would come out again on TV, and I was talking about when it would come, and you'd see it on like Elvira's deal, and now you got this, these HD TV, which is Comet. Sometimes they show the old stuff like that, and then even on
they got like Svengoolie on one of those, right?
That's on MeTV.
Yeah,
Svengoolie. And he shows a lot of old stuff, which
I watched Elvira. It was on Saturday night. I watched it in California before they even showed it here. But when things like Monty Python and Second City's TV were starting to show, then they started having the Elvira's here.
I definitely remember her from growing up. I had a pretty big crush on her when I was a kid.
Is it green that looks like a frog / lizard / slimy froggy thing?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay, I don't know anything about it. I think I saw a scene on the Monster Squad that he got out of the lagoon.
Yeah, he popped up a few times, although it's not technically the Creature from the Black Lagoon because they didn't have the rights.
I don't know anything about it. If it's a book or a movie or a TV show or a comic, I don't know anything about it.
You saw The Shape of Water, which isn't the creature, but everybody associates it.
Ugh.
Yeah, we both hated that flick. It was gross and weird and not entertaining. Did you like it more or less than Crimson Peak?
Well, Crimson Peak, I like it better than this Shape of Water. The Shape of Water was pretty disgusting.
Yeah, so for you, it's the worst Guillermo del Toro movie then?
I will say, yeah. I mean, it was pretty lame, and
did you like Pan's Labyrinth or Devil's Backbone more?
Pan's Labyrinth. More gruesome, more story. Yeah, the Devil's Backbone, it was scary-ish, and the story was okay. But then on Pan's Labyrinth, I mean, you can actually see, like, the fantasy of the girl that is going through, like, a Spanish Civil War and all the atrocities that happen in there. Obviously, that is more involved in way better movie.
Do you think you hook more into the fantasy aspects too?
Because of the fantasy elements. I mean, it's like the monsters, everything about it, like the story, the girl fantasizing to kind of forget about the atrocities that is happening in her surroundings. But also the monsters, I mean, come on, the monster with like the hands with the eyes and the way he moves, and it's just like very terrifying. Or when the ginger root starts to like scream and move like a baby, it was pretty wild. One of the things that I love about the movie too is the music of it. The entire music, almost, it is like a lullaby. Very terrifying. Terrifying too, because it's like all the stuff that you feel that you're safe when you're a child is just a fantasy, or the world is a fucked up place.
And it is interesting too, because the Universal monsters specifically, I think, are well known for having robust scores, and music is very important in those movies, more so than a lot of the more modern horrors that have come in their way.
Creature of evil, running amok, blazing a trail of fear-crazed horror. From the jungle's most guarded secret comes this amazing story of a captive wild woman, torn between the mad cravings of animal blood and the longing for human love. A woman whose jungle instincts give her sinister power over man and beast.
And suppose your experiment does succeed, what will you have? A human form with animal instincts.
You know what the police will do till they catch you? No, of course you don't. They put you on trial. Then they'll put you in the electric chair and kill you.
The only silent horror movie I can ever remember being on TV was Nosferatu. And it scared the crap out of me. And if you want to know who I think the best vampire was, that's it. And that German cat was scary as hell. And still is. He looks... He's probably the most undead person I ever met, you know.
Well, they also, you kept talking about the bride, you know, they also had the son of Frankenstein.
Well, and you know, of course, you know, she went on in the late 60s and 70s, she was on all kinds of shows, you know.
Elsa Lancaster, the actress?
Yeah. And of course, she never played a part like that. And she was kind of meant to be sexy in that. But, you know, she always played some dowdy old gal, you know, in the late 60s and the 70s. She did all kinds of TV shows and was in all kinds of movies. I think she may be in the mad world, too, you know. But she always played some dowdy old gal, you know. She didn't, that was probably the only supposed to be sexy part she ever played, you know.
I don't know too much about it. I mean, I know there's a movie named The Bride of Frankenstein, but I don't know absolutely nothing about it.
You did like the movie Gods and Monsters, though.
Yes. Yeah. But that's more of because of the writer, right? Or like the producer, or like the actor.
It's a dramatization about the life of the director.
Yeah. So it's not too much about the action monster.
Did you ever see Shadow of the Vampire, the movie about the making of Nosferatu, where they try to pretend like the actor, Max Schreck, was an actual vampire?
I don't think so. I've watched a lot of documentaries that included...
Well, this was a fictionalized version. It had John Malkovich in it and Willem Dafoe, if I recall correctly.
William Dafoe play him?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. I did see that. I just can't remember when that was.
I think it was the late 90s, early 2000s.
Okay, well, I know I saw it.
Do you guys remember something called Paula the Ape Woman, a.k.a. Gorilla Girl?
Paul the who?
Paula the Ape Woman.
Close to it, because they had started, I think it how it started, she was in a carnival. I think that's what was the ape woman in the carnival, and then, you know, then she had gotten loose and didn't see too much. I just seen parts of it when it first
It was a cheapie, yeah. I think the actress might have been Indian, and I think that what they did is they took the original movie, and then they took scenes from the first movie and did a new movie, and then inserted scenes from the original movie to fill it out, and it was just this bizarre thing that they did. I was just curious if I'd never heard of it, so I was just curious if you guys had any familiarity with it.
Yeah, I just heard of it.
I saw the movie, and I can't remember where I saw it. But it might have been on TV.
Count Dracula sleeps in this coffin, but rises every night at sunset. Chick is right. This is awful silly stuff.
The nation's top comics, Abbott and Costello. Petrified, but hilariously. Plus the dangerous and terrifying Wolfman, played by Lon Chaney. Plus that fiend out of a nightmare, the vampire Batman, Count Dracula, played by Bela Lugosi. Plus the most dreaded creature of them all, the Frankenstein monster, played by Glenn Strange. Plus a couple of luscious but designing females in the spookiest laugh fest on record.
Before my time, man.
You didn't even watch the ones where they met the monsters, though?
No.
And did you ever see any of the movies that weren't Abbott and Costello where they combined all the monsters?
I don't think so.
You never even saw, like, Frankenstein versus the Wolfman?
Man, the vaguest of memories.
Yeah, and then they did House of Frankenstein and House of Dracula, and both of those had the monsters.
No, I got nothing.
Nope. Y'all also mentioned all the Abbott and Costello movies. Did y'all catch those?
Yes. Dude, I probably saw more of them than I saw... I mean, because I saw all the big Universal stars, you know, Dracula, Wolfman, Mummy, and Frankenstein. But it was Abbott and Costello. My grandpa watched Abbott and Costello movies constantly.
I mean, I didn't just watch the monster ones. I watched the comedies, too. I'm sure you all did the same, right?
I did, too.
But I think the monster...
Dude, the monster ones were actually good.
Yeah, but the monster ones were the ones that kind of brought me into watching their other comedies.
Because that was where they all actually met. You know, you did have the Frankenstein and the Wolfman, but for the most part, they didn't interact beyond that, except in the Abbott and Costello movies, where they all showed up.
Yep.
That was the Avengers of the horror movies.
That was a neat thing, too, because because there was no internet back then. I remember getting a magazine that showed a picture of Frankenstein versus the Wolfman. And I was just like, oh my God, Dad, look at this. They're going to fight. We got to go see it. And he's like, yeah, that movie was done like 20 years ago. You know? But seeing like two monsters face off, that was also a big part of it for me. And that was early on.
It very much was the first shared cinematic universe. People forget because it's been so long since that was a thing, but you never saw properties from one movie and another movie mixing, especially something as primal as monsters. Something that's so like taps into what kids want to see.
And then,
yeah, totally want to see this guy fight this guy.
No, because I remember watching Godzilla versus King Kong.
But that's the same thing.
But those creatures are gods. Like, they're mystical. I never dreamt of being Godzilla. I remember dreaming to be a wolfman. Like, I remember when I saw Teen Wolf and all those movies, I was like, man, I would so want to be a werewolf. The pack mentality. I was like, oh, I would so want to be that. I never saw myself as wanting to be Mothra. Like, right. I didn't want to be.
Well, and also you're more limited in what you can do because of the scale. You know that like 75% of the movie is going to be Japanese people talking, and then it's going to be 25 minutes of giant monsters smashing into each other.
Yes.
So with something like Frankenstein versus the Wolfman, you don't know how that's going to play out. There's all kinds of different scenarios that can go, you know, into that. You don't know when they're going to meet. You don't know if they're going to hate each other, or they're going to like each other, team up. You don't know what's going to happen.
Dude, it was like watching wrestling. They hated each other, and then they became buddies. And they fought the third guy, and someone, you know, the heel would pop. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Did I for Godzilla?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I brought those up.
Man.
To talk to him.
Yeah, and they were one of those movies that were always shown on Sundays. There was a time where until Sunday evening, you might have the news, and then it was preaching till noon, and then you'd have, like, wrestling was on Sundays. They'd show wrestling, and then there would be these movies. And a lot of them were movies like The Bowery Boys and The Abbott and Costello's. They were all pretty old movies. And they would show the monster movies like Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. You know, there was the Abbott Costello movie that was a kind of a spoof on that movie.
I was looking at it earlier because they had...
The Abbott Costello movie was Chasing Ghosts. I can't remember.
They had the one, there was one that was like Abbott and Costello Meets the Mummy. And then there was Abbott and Costello with Boris Karloff. It says they meet Boris Karloff. And then there was one other, I think it was another one about Frankenstein. I think it was one about with all the monsters. But remember, it was just people dressing up to be the monster and trying to scare them away. And it was always little short guy, the one that was always, and he was like, I didn't see nothing. Oh, you know, and he'd run away and yell, Abbott, Abbott. He would get petrified when he would see him, and then he just couldn't move. And he would sit there and yell, and he'd go,
There's this one where I think it's called Ghost Chasers, where these kids die around this well or something. Abbott and Costello. You know, it takes place someplace like Connecticut or New England or something. The ghost appears to them, and they're afraid of them at first, but then they become friends with them. In fact, there's a movie with Daryl Hannah in it that was a very similar thing where her husband kills her on her wedding night or something. I think that one's got Cyndi Lauper in it or something. Where they go?
Which one you talking about with Daryl Hannah and Steve Guttenberg?
High Spirits, right?
High Spirits, yeah. Because it's got Liam Neeson in it, too.
Yeah, it's got Liam Neeson.
He's the one that
killed.
Did you guys get a kick out of all the monsters appearing in one movie like that?
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, you know, and of course, usually when that happened, it was a comedy.
Yeah, here's one. It's Abbott and Costello meets the Invisible Man. Abbott and Costello and the Mummy. And remember another one, like I was talking about. It was Abbott and Costello with Boris Karloff. There was only a few that they did, but that was just more. Yeah, here it is, Abbott and Costello. And Abbott and Costello meets the killer, Boris Karloff. I just remember Karloff in it, but I couldn't remember how it went. But those were pretty cool. I mean, that was the funny ones. And they were just making fun of all the, you know, Frankensteins and mummies.
And they were also made towards the end of their career. If you look at the dates, I think you'll find that most of those were made towards the end of Abbott and Costello's career. They were trying to save their careers, and of course it did. It kept them going a lot longer than they would have.
Yeah, but they ended up breaking out, though.
They ended up breaking out because one of them was a real bad drunk.
I can't remember which one. I know. Because I just remember seeing, you know, when they made the movie about them.
Death. Eternal punishment. For anyone who opens this casket.
The mummy. Is it dead or alive? Human or inhuman? You'll know. You'll see. You'll feel the awful, creeping, crawling terror that stands your hair on end and brings a scream to your lips. There's nothing on earth like the mummy.
You will not remember what I show you now, and yet I shall awaken memories of love and crime and death.
Now I know his horrible plan. He's going to kill her and make her a living mummy like himself.
The mummy.
What about the mummy?
The mummy to me wasn't really scary. You kind of felt bad for him.
I remember when we were kids, if we were going to mimic a movie monster, it would be the damn mummy.
Yeah, because you really kind of felt bad for him.
Yeah, and plus the fact girls always, you know, you drag your foot and hold your arm like this. It would always scare the crap out of girls. And if I remember right, at night, we'd be talking, because we talked about all kinds of silly stuff, but if it scared the girls, man, we'd start putting on a show.
Yeah.
Still, my wife, you know, the Exorcist scared her. She never wants to see the Exorcist. And every once in a while, at night or something, she'll be watching a Stephen King, because she likes Stephen King. She'll watch something like that or be talking to somebody, telling them about something spooky. And I'll reach over in her ear and go, "Your mother sucks cocks in the house. Don't do that. You see me do it. Don't do that." That's got to be one of my favorite movie lines. Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
But like I said, still, it's... But then years later, the newer ones that come out...
And this is the Brendan Fraser movies.
Well, no, the later ones, they were back in the 30s and 40s or whatever. But yeah, the Brendan Fraser movies, then that made they really made the mummy out to be.
And I love those movies. I got them all. Yeah. I've got I got all the sequels, you know. They're still making them. I like every one of them dadgum things. And I still watch them because, you know, they're comedies.
Yeah, they make the
plus the fact the whichever guy. Wife, you know, because he had two different wives, and I think Zeta Jones was the last wife, wasn't she?
I never made it to the one it's set in China. It was China, right?
No, it was the same. It was the same actress in the first one and the second one.
Right. It was at the third one.
I think it was Zeta Jones.
But then they did the spinoffs. But then the second one had that same because they had a son. The second mummy is where the Brendan Fraser and that same lady that he met. They were married, and they had a son.
Right.
And he was the one that could.
It was the last one where it's the Chinese Emperor
and stuff, yeah.
Or Warlord or whatever the hell he was.
Jet Li, right?
Yeah. But I think they had to switch wives. And I think Zeta Jones took his wife's, the original one's place. And I can't remember who she was or whether she was really British or not. I saw her as more attractive than Zeta Jones. I mean, she was great in Zorro, but...
Uh-huh. Catherine Zeta-Jones didn't play the first two.
I know. I think she played the third one. Dad, gum.
What did you think of the Tom Cruise one?
Tom Cruise what?
The Mummy movie. Didn't you see that one already? It's on video. I guess not, because it just came out.
Well, I saw Diary of a Vampire, and Tom Cruise is a hit or miss with me. Diary of a Vampire I thought was kind of interesting, but I've never watched it again. But I thought the costumes and the way it was done was pretty cool.
But, I mean, the last year they came out with a new Mummy movie that starred Tom Cruise.
And I don't know if I've seen it. There's a new one. There was a new one that's out, I think, now that's kind of a Mummy movie.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'd assume, because you haunt the red boxes, I'd assume that you'd already pulled that one out, but I guess not.
What's it called?
The Mummy.
Oh, well... Now, I can even remember it was a late night movie. First time I saw that Mummy movie. We lived in Tennessee then, and you know, late night then, the TV went off like 10:30 or 11. It was on a Saturday night because I was able to stay up and watch it. And, of course, the first time I watched it was on a black and white set. So it was like 1963. I don't know what... because I can't remember the date that movie came out, but it was in color, and I didn't know it. The first time I saw it in color, I think it was in the 70s. And I was amazed that it was in color. I thought it was better in color. But most of them, I think they're better because they're black and white. I can remember a time when black and white movies were still coming out, and I'd get mad because I said, man, this is modern era. What the hell are we watching black and white movies? But now that I'm older, I can appreciate the genre, you know.
I know the basis of it. I know what it was about.
Well, you and I actually fairly recently watched The Mummy.
Ugh. With that...
the Brendan Fraser one.
With Tom Cruise.
Oh, did you we watched that one together?
Yeah.
I that movie was so bad, I don't
bad,
remember.
Bad, ridiculous, yeah. And plus, it's fucking Tom Cruise. Ugh.
Yeah. But no, I believe we watched the older 1999 Brendan Fraser movie before we saw the Tom Cruise one as well.
See, I can see the mummy being a universal monster. And for example, I seen like the Hotel Transylvania. I know it's like a cliche of the movie with all the universal monsters, but that was one of the ones that kind of explore a little bit more of what his powers. Oh yeah, make all this sandstorm and do all this. When I grew up knowing about the mummy, I didn't know what else the mummy do, especially just scaring people, just go with the bandages like the mummy, you know, that was it. But I know he has more powers to it, but I don't know the details.
It's been so long since I've seen the original Mummy movies, I don't know what he could do in those movies. I do remember that it was kind of a big thing how many powers the mummy from the 1999 movie had. Just because CGI, if nothing else, he couldn't do all that kind of stuff in the older movies. That's so something I think they invented.
So is a mummy coming from the actual book, or is just like a cinematography invention?
I don't know. I'm not sure if that was created for cinema or not, because there was a real strong interest in Egyptian, you know, lore in the 1920s and going into the 1930s. So it could really go either way. I'm not sure if there's I don't think that the source material is particularly, if there is a novel source, I don't think it's particularly revered or anything. It probably, they might have optioned some rando book just so they could have a mummy movie, or it might have been created whole cloth. I'm not sure.
Well,
no pun intended.
And that's one of the things that, you know, the mummy, you're kind of like the ones that, you know, that really exist. I mean, not the concept of the monster or the mummy, but mummy itself. You know, when you go to a museum and you see mummies there, you know, you start kind of to think of it like, oh, I give you that creeps, because you learn about, you know, the monster mummy and all that. And you know that they're actually in a crystal sarcophagus, that they actually look, you know, they're as mummies. So,
right. Well, yeah. And you and I went to a mummy museum or a mummy exhibition one time, and there were so many interesting variations on the methods by which you become a mummy from culture to culture, and there was just so much material to draw from, and they did nothing with any of that stuff in the modern mummy movie, which I thought was especially lame.
Yeah.
Because this is a movie that's got an international scope, they're actually looking to do something different than what had been done with mummies in the past, and they touched on none of these alternative mummy methods, you know, different ways of going.
I guess they just want to go into the whole Egyptian mummy. For which, I mean, it's fascinating.
They wanted to make a Marvel superheroes type thing, and they went majorly bust. They weren't even trying to make a mummy movie, which is, I think, a big part of the problem.
Yeah. I can see a lot of potential in the mummy, because that's terrifying. Dead body and, like, all that stuff, like, you know. But
I think much more than Frankenstein, the mummy was the proto-zombie, and you and I have watched our fair share of zombie material over the years.
Yeah.
I know a lot of that's driven by me, but you've been a fan of some of that material as well.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's like you were saying, the mummy has one of the largest potential, in my opinion, and apparently your opinion too. He hasn't been exploited that much.
Although he has, I mean, financially speaking, probably still the most successful or one of the most successful of the universal monsters.
No, but I'm talking about in terms of history.
Sure, that too.
Like, yeah. In the actual expanding of what the mummy and, you know, we see all these things about Dracula. Dracula is one of the most known monsters, and they always go into what he can do and details and changing based on movie and books and stuff. And the mummy, they just don't go into too much detail, like what the power or what's the deal or why. I mean, is he getting revived from the death or because of the evil wizard? Not evil wizard, but, you know, something else, like a curse, or just because, I don't know. See, there's so much stuff you can do with the mummy that is not being exploited.
Yeah. Plus, we both did the ride. Did I do that one on my own?
The ride?
Yeah, Universal. That was the one with all the fire?
Oh, no, we did it together. Yeah. It was, that one was cool. Yeah.
Hot. You feel hot. That hot. Yeah. You feel the heat of that flame.
Yeah, but come on. I'm not going to remember if I did the mummy, but I'm going to remember if I did the Gringotts Bank Escape.
Yeah. Well, it was an older ride, too. But you can see why they kept it, because it's dazzling, extremely brief.
Yeah. So, I like the mummy, but I would like to see more, going into more detail. Maybe I'll do a research to see where I can find more about the mummy.
So, here's the final one, and I know you've got a history with this particular property, because I actually saw one of these with you, and you hated it, The Mummy.
Oh, the worst. Those movies are so fucking terrible. And I think what, I'm trying to remember, when we walked out of Hollywood Theater, what I hated the most about the original, not the original, obviously, the...
The 90s mummy. No, it was the 2000s, wasn't it? Did it come out in 98 or 2000?
I mean, internet save us. What's the fucking dude who was in that one?
It was 99. Brendan Fraser.
So what pissed me off was that I was expecting an R-rated horror movie, and instead it was a fucking weird, slappy, faux Indiana Jones bullshit where there was no blood. And I was like, I thought we were going to see the fucking mummy. I realized it was going to be some fucking slapstick PG-13 comedy. And that's what it was. So I was pissed off, and I hate all those fucking movies.
It definitely felt like one of those off-brand Indiana Jones knockoffs from the early 80s. But whereas you hated it, I actually got a kick out of it, in part because I think that Brendan Fraser was an underrated leading man. I actually thought he had a lot of personality. I thought that when he reached in and got that deep voice, he was able to kind of shake the George of the Jungle, Encino Man image that he had.
I think I just had the wrong expectations going into it. I think if I would have realized what it was going to be, I probably would have enjoyed it more, especially how down the fucking drain that franchise went even further after that with that horrible Scorpion King bullshit.
Yeah, The Mummy Returns was not a great flick either.
Right. So probably the original. I was not par for the course for that film, because that movie made a lot of fucking money and people really, really liked it. But me and Nikita just
rewatched it a couple weeks back, and it was a blast. It was fun. It was definitely more Temple of Doom than Raiders of the Lost Ark, but it was a good time. It was a lot of fun. And of course it helps that Rachel Weisz had such a great career after that movie. And so there's a lot of good feelings toward her, given her body of work following that one. Cause I don't remember her being in anything before The Mummy. And then it seemed like she was in everything after The Mummy.
Well, then I think I was expecting The Mummy to, like, you know, be fucking in it. There's right. not a fucking mummy movie, right? Isn't it all fucking scarabs and bullshit from, well, like 9/10 of it?
That was funny rewatching it. I really thought there was a lot of Arnold Vosloo in the movie, and he's not even like in human form until maybe like 2/3 of the way through it. It's all, you know, the CGI creatures and sand and shit like that. So I was actually, whereas when we first saw the movie, I thought there was too much human mummy. In rewatching it, it's like, now they held back on that for a fairly long period of time. And I thought Vosloo was okay.
If I remember correctly, those are my criticisms. One, it was kind of goofy, bad Indiana Jones knockoff. And two, where was the fucking mummy? I'm remembering my criticisms correctly.
And if I remember correctly, we saw it with Ween. And I think you guys in particular loathed the sequence where they have to borrow the airplane from the British royal pilot dude. And then he crashes it and they're like saluting him as he falls into quicksand or some shit like that. And you were just like, you just were dying. You're just like, get this fucking shit off the screen. I think you guys particularly hated the movie at that point in time.
I don't remember that scene specifically, but you describing it, probably you're right. I probably fucking hated the shit out of that.
And yet a lot of the humor was cheeseball and definitely some big, ridiculous, goofy performances. But I thought it was fun overall still.
But that was PG-13 in the late 90s. PG-13 we can show titties and say fuck shit balls. That's PG-13 now and have like really adult themes. PG-13, I feel, in the late 90s was just like, it was G with like a little more violence. You know what I mean? So the fact that it was PG-13 was a flag to me, like, oh, this I should have seen when it said PG-13. This was not. But no, I think I remember walking out and I was surprised because I had like assumed it was R. Like, I assumed The Mummy was R. And I maybe have to go back and look at some of the trailers. Maybe they hyped that up to me wrong. I don't know. But yeah, PG-13 in the late 90s was Encino Man, right? I mean, that's what it was. Yeah, which I don't know if Encino Man was actually PG-13, but that's the vibe you're going to get. You're not going to get more than some, like, maybe a couple curse words and some light violence. You're definitely not seeing blood. Because remember, they had like scarabs ripping people apart and you'd see nothing. Like, there was no blood or anything. I was like, what the fuck?
It would be a mound and then like a skeleton. Or they do the bit where where you see the shadow of somebody getting twisted into a corpse, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
I think the most gruesome thing was the dude who lost his tongue and eyes for a little while there, where they full on killed him.
So yeah, that's the extent of my mummy stuff.
And now, did you ever watch the old mummies from the 30s though?
That's the same kind of vague black and white movie stuff from.
Yeah, I think I thought it was probably kind of boring too. I think I vaguely remember seeing parts of it, but I kind of tuning it out. Too much time with Boris Karloff running around with the funny little hat, the Shriner hat, and not enough time with him being in bandages.
Yeah, I see. And I'm just having a couple flashes of him in the bandages. That's all I get.
And I'm also remembering again Monster Squad. I liked that mummy, and they had more fun with the concept of the mummy, and they could do a little bit more with it in the 80s than they could back in the 30s, I felt like.
Man, I gotta rewatch Monster Squad. I'm having a lot of fun remembering
it. It's still so fucking good. And I actually went ahead and watched, because I was the one who liked the mummy, I watched on home video The Mummy Returns and The Scorpion King. And I would have to say that The Scorpion King is actually the better of the two, even though it's like this bizarre, anachronistic, barbarian movie that should have come out in 84 instead of 2001. But The Mummy Returns is pretty much shit. I thought that maybe the fight sequence with Rachel Weisz and the resurrected girlfriend of the mummy dude was cool. But as soon as the CGI Scorpion King shows up, it is just, even in its time, it was horrific. And now it's just the worst fucking poster child for how bad CGI can be is The Scorpion King. Laughable even to this day.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at any list of worst CGI of all time, that shit's going to be on it. It's like a staple of those lists.
They did come out with a third mummy movie. I don't know anybody who ever saw this thing. I didn't even realize it came out in theaters. The Tomb of the Dragon Emperor with Jet Li.
What?
It actually did okay. It cost $145 million. It made $401 million, which is not great, but not a total bomb or anything. You're still like, wait, what you said. I'm processing. What are you talking about? It takes place, I think, in China, and Maria Bello's in that one. And did you watch the most recent Mummy?
No, sir.
No
interest at all. And I heard it wasn't really as bad as it looked, but just no interest.
It's so mediocre. It's not terrible. It's not painful to watch. It's just this thing that's on for a period of time, and then it stops being on, and you move on with your life. You don't hate it. You're not tearing your hair out over it or anything, but it's just there, and then it's not there.
So what was this Dracula movie that came out that was supposed to reboot this dark universe?
Yeah, that was one with Luke Evans. It's better than The Mummy. Similar impact upon your psyche and emotions. It's just slightly more entertaining.
I don't even remember this movie coming out.
Hardly anybody does. Nobody watched the thing. It's got a 22% on Rotten Tomatoes, so it kind of came and went. I mean, come on, you're expecting Luke Evans to carry your movie? That hasn't happened so far.
Interesting. Yeah, I definitely haven't seen that one.
The stare down, the Van Helsing and Dracula stare down.
But they always let these things die. It's like the Dracula adaptation was drawn by Mike Mignola, you know? You could have built upon that. I don't think the comics ever did any more Dracula stuff. They had those cool designs that I think Jim Steranko contributed to, if I recall correctly, and nothing was ever done with any of those designs. I've never seen like the red suit or any of that other kind of stuff show up anywhere else again. And then it was years before they tried to do anything else with Dracula again. Even though it was successful, they didn't try to do Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. A whole other film company did that one. And then they had the success with the Mummy movies. So it's like, okay, cool. One thing you could do is, instead of making a Mummy and then Mummy versus some new thing, the Scorpion King, Mummy versus yet some other thing, what was Jet Li, the Dragon Lord, whatever the fuck he was called?
Yeah. Dragon Mummy.
Why not have, like, start introducing the Universal Monsters through the Mummy movies? You could have had that, you know, kind of build up from there. But they always seem to drop the ball, especially when you factor in that Universal has done so little with their monsters since the 40s, it seems like. I don't know if they're ashamed of them or they just don't know what to do with them. It seems like that's part of the problem too, because
whoever handles, you know, I'm not in depth enough to know who handles those decisions at Universal, but they make some real odd choices when they do stuff as far as when they're gonna make movies, who's going to be in the movies. You know, this whole shared universe thing, which is now dead.
Is it dead?
It is. It's dead.
When was that announced?
4 or 5 months, I think they called you about it.
Yeah, Frank. Okay. I know that Frank called me. He was like, they're done.
I don't know that it's as dead as you say, but we'll get to that. We'll get to that in a minute.
Well, they had pictures for The Invisible Man, and they showed pictures of
Bride of Frankenstein.
Bride of Frankenstein, and that has officially, the directors dropped out of both of those movies.
Oh, so Bill Condon's not doing Bride of Frankenstein anymore?
No.
Oh, that's too bad, man. I was really looking forward to it, because I love Gods and Monsters, again, with Brendan Fraser. Great movie about looking back on the history of the director of Bride of Frankenstein, Frank Whale, showing, like, the making of the movie, you know, as a memoir, kind of paralleling the life that this guy has today versus the life he had back when he was doing the movies. And I was really looking forward to see his take on Bride of Frankenstein. They didn't have the bride cast, though, right?
Let me see.
Were they they're talking about
Benicio del Toro was going to be in it. Was he going to be in it, or was he going to be in the
episode? No. You're thinking of fucking shit. Shakur. Anton Shakur. Help me out, guys. The guy from No Country for Old Men.
You're right. Yes.
What is his
name? Right.
The director?
No, the actor.
He's a guy who always he always reminded me of Raul Julia in his early career. And he
creepy ass.
Javier
Bardem.
Javier Bardem.
Okay, so he was in it, but Universal released a statement that both movies were on
indefinite hiatus,
okay. Which, you know, 95% of the time means that they're dead.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, there's possibly a little chance, but from what I read, the movies were dead.
Okay. Even though we've got The Shape of Monster, which is essentially a Gilman movie.
No, see, and he does them right, though. Small budget.
Benicio del Toro?
Yeah. We're jumping ahead.
Guillermo del Toro.
But aren't we jumping ahead now?
So do you think that there's still a place for doing the Universal Monsters? Do you think that these characters still have a role to play in popular culture? Do you think that they could actually do like a Marvel-style shared universe with these characters and anybody would show up for it?
I think if the right actors did it, it was done in a new fresh way, sure. You know, a lot of those movies that come out and get remade, I don't like. But then other ones, I didn't think I would like the Frasier Mummy movies. And sure as crap, I go to the first one and, you know, I'm hooked. But, you know, a lot of times these actors, they want to spread their wings and do things they want to do. Most of the time when they do that, I do not like the movie. And I don't like them in it. Tom Cruise is a good example. I like the Mission Impossible movies. And I watched them just the other night. I watched one that he's a secret agent.
Night and Day?
Night and Day, that was it. And I thoroughly, and you know what? I only barely remembered it because I'd watched it once. And what threw me off was I bought it. And I probably bought it on Amazon. And it was in my Cruise collection. I was looking for something to watch. Those things that you gave me at Christmas time, I didn't watch those until a couple of weeks ago. Thoroughly enjoyed them, and wished there was more.
Did you legit had not seen the first Trancers?
Mm-mm.
I can't believe you missed Trancers, man. They used to run that on 39 all the damn time. That's how I caught it.
I didn't see it.
Going back to the Mummy movie, it was the Mummy Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
Yeah.
Okay, it was Maria Bello.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, she was the one. I just checked it. It's still okay. Brandon Fraser, but it was Maria Bello.
She didn't turn me on.
You didn't like Maria Bello?
No, because first off, in that movie, there was nothing really innocent about her. That's part of what the innocent, weak woman. I don't consider myself a chauvinist or a sexist, and y'all know, you know, my wife does whatever the hell she wants whenever the hell she wants, and I like it that way. But let's face it, when there's a weak woman, you can take care of that weak woman. That is a turnoff. And that first one, she was kind of weak. And in the second one, she was a lot more the adventurer and up for it. But still, she needed to be taken care of. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I dug her in that. I agree with you. And Bella has never done anything for me either. So we're sympathetic on that.
Maybe Night and Day that you were talking about.
Cameron Diaz.
Cameron Diaz. She starts off the movie, she's the weak one, and in the end, she's turning his own lines on him. She's taking care of him. That's cool, and that's sexy. You know?
Well, Maria Bello plays on NCIS now.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah, she's one that did Coyote Ugly, and yeah, she was in there.
Yeah, and I've got Coyote Ugly, and I like that movie, but it's not a movie I
like the
watch.
Part where when she played with that Scott guy in the History of Violence. But
let's face it, Coyote Ugly was a beam.
Universal Monsters has been a Rolled Spine Podcasts production, starring Illegal Machine, Fry Hole, Mr. Fix-It, Old Dude, Peekit Trothamandos, and introducing the Blue Mule. Produced and directed by Diabolu Frank. Special thanks to the 108th Sage, Alibots, Anim Freaks, Anim Nostalgia, Anya, Anookit, Coffee Comics, Comics in the Golden Age, Daniel French Fish Bonius sound design. The bass, Derek William Crabb of Fanholes Podcast. The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff. History of Comics on Film. House of Max. It's Plastic Man. Jeffrey Brown. Justice's First Dawn. Keith G. Baker. Kyle Benin. Mern Loy. Nadi Dad's Podcast. Odal Abner Dracula. Professor Frenzy. Raid Adventures. Richard Field. Tiny Toy Robot Z. Tomb Price. Trek It Talk. Warlock Thanos Podcast. Wonder Woman Warrior for Peace Podcast. And Zach Sally. The End. Or is it?